Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What is a teraflop?
A million flops.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
We're back with episode 65 of the UK Tech Weekly podcast with an all-star Manol to get you going. I've got Scott Carey, online editor of Tech World.
Hello.
Lewis Painter, senior staff writer at Macworld and Tech Advisor.
Hello.
And staff writer of those titles, Dom Preston, as well.
Hey.
We've got two topics for you this week, and we will try not to mansplain any of them. You'll see why later. But first of all, we're going to start off in sunny Los Angeles, I believe, gentlemen, with E3.
Yes.
What do the E's stand for?
Oh, God, it is because there are three E's. Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Yes.
Oh, you're good.
Nailed it. So, there's a lot of games, so I hear.
Many
and
games.
So I have been made to write about. Dom and Lewis, in particular, why don't you tell us why everyone should be so excited about a nerdy games event?
Well, I mean, E3 is the biggest nerdy games event of the year, every
that
year.
That was said with love, not
for
with
a while.
not with scorn.
So it's kind of when most of the big companies hold their biggest game announcements and hardware announcements. So the big news this year was the Xbox One X, which is Microsoft's new mid-generation console.
Why didn't they just stick with Scorpio?
I know, Scorpio is a horrible name made by a 12-year-old boy. But Xbox One X is sort of rubbish in its own way because it sounds exactly like Xbox One S, which is their other console.
Which is tremendous confusion. So the Xbox One S, for the listener, is a slightly souped-up version of the Xbox One.
Yeah, so it plays all the same games, but it will sort of do 4K graphics at 60 frames per second, in theory. So it's the same stuff, but more powerful hardware to play the same things and make them all look better.
What's the X?
Extreme. Excellent.
So were you just describing the X there? Or the S?
The X. The X is the souped up one. The S is a slightly redesigned Xbox One. You can't buy the original Xbox One anymore. The Xbox One S is basically the same console in a slightly smaller, prettier case.
Okay.
And a very minor hardware tweak, but nothing that matters.
It's got 4K media playback as well, doesn't it? But not game support.
But yeah, basically, so now if you want an Xbox One, you can get that Xbox One S, or from later this year, you can buy the Xbox One X. It's sort of, the X is a rival, I guess, to the PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yeah.
Though Microsoft are talking some absolute nonsense about that. And Microsoft are claiming that the PlayStation 4 Pro is so underpowered compared to the Xbox One X that the PlayStation 4 Pro is actually a rival to the Xbox One S, their like lower spec console, which has just been met with howls of derision by everyone in games media because this is plainly not true.
Okay, they've got to say something though, right?
Yeah.
Got to talk it up somehow.
Yeah. I mean, it is fair. The Xbox One X is... So the PlayStation 4 Pro is Sony's sort of more powerful version of the PlayStation 4, so it sits in that same kind of place. Mm-hmm. The One X is definitely more powerful than the Pro.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
What is a teraflop?
A million flops.
What he said.
I'm going to cut just that audio and use it as my text tone.
I don't even know if that is actually it.
maybe a million flops.
I like that. I like that.
So the way I understand it, we were talking about this previously, is that this is like a sort of a stopgap console for Xbox before they release their big next-gen one, which will go up against PlayStation's next-gen.
It's a really weird kind of idea, because it's the first time they've done this kind of mid-generation upgrade.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, consoles are quite weird in the fact that they'll be kind of in line with PC when they're released, but then throughout the years, PC becomes stronger, console stays the same, and then they'll bring out the new one, which is the same with the PS3. But yeah, the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X kind of signifies that, you know, PC gaming, you know, power and the kind of graphics behind these games, you can't wait. You can't wait 5, 6, 7 years for another console.
Yeah.
Because you'll be left so far in the dust, it's insane.
I think it's also a question of them tapping into that. I think basically the games console manufacturers have been eyeing up the way the phone market works, where people will replace their handset every 2 years. And they're just looking, saying, hang on, we're waiting, asking people to replace their console every 6 years. Like, why are we waiting that long to make someone spend another few hundred quid on some new hardware?
Yeah.
I was kind of half hoping that the Xbox One X would be modular and kind of upgradable. There was some rumor about that before it was announced.
Like
officially.
A PC.
Like a PC, exactly. I mean, that to me makes so much sense because, you know, instead of having these big launches every few years, you can just switch it out as you go along.
I suppose for the mass market, what they need to do is try and get people spending who won't want to do that. Because isn't the... Mostly the attraction of these consoles is people don't want to fuss about with upgrading.
It's the simplification that you can just buy one thing and that plays all the games that, you know, for that console, and you don't have to mess around with
and
it.
And the games you already own as well.
Screw with it. Yeah, exactly.
And how much is it?
£450 in the UK, $500 in the US.
Is that good?
I think it's a bit high.
I don't know, I was expecting around £500. Right. And based on what they were saying before it launched, they were like, this is not going to be a standard device, this is going to be a high-end premium device, you're going to pay more for it. So I thought they were kind of raising everyone's expectations about
price. £450 sounds all right.
It's cheaper than the equivalent PC.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, if you try and build a PC with that hardware, you'd pay a lot more. But it is £100 and $100 more than the PlayStation 4 Pro, which is its closest console equivalent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in 2 years, so they want you to spend the equivalent again.
But you've also got to think in terms of the way that, you know, it's not coming out till November 7th, I think. Mm-hmm. So Sony has 5 months to announce a price drop on the PS4 Pro and turn that £100 gap into £150 gap.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to see them doing that just to really stick one up to Microsoft and make it look like a really poor value proposition.
Well, that's obviously why Microsoft are so keen to big up how much more powerful it is, because they can probably recognise the threat of that.
Yeah, they don't want that comparison. They want it to sit in its own class above the PS4 Pro.
I'm not sure Sony's that fussed, to be honest, though, because they announced recently that they've sold 60 million PS4s and PS4 Pros, and that's nothing compared to Microsoft and the Xbox One. They didn't announce numbers for so long because they were so low compared to PS4.
They're definitely flagging in sales, Microsoft.
My little bro finally traded his Xbox in for a PS4 Pro the other day, and I've never been more proud.
I feel so happy right now.
It was a great moment.
Is that what part of this war is, then? They have to keep one-upping each other to try and... Well, because people are obviously loyal to their brand. Mm-hmm. Are people going to switch to PlayStation because of this? Because of a price difference?
I think it's more than one thing. I think if it's cheaper and the games are better, because Sony, while Microsoft were pushing the hardware this year, Sony have been pushing the games and the exclusives that are coming to PS4.
Yeah, so what have we got?
Days Gone.
Days Gone is a big PS4 exclusive they're pushing.
Yeah, that's the kind of their new zombie game for PS4 that's coming out. But it looks very different to kind of the standard zombie game, because in most zombie games like Resident Evil, you kind of face up against, and then 3 or 4 or 5 zombies at any one time. But in this game, it's kind of scaled up. So you're being chased by like 20, 30, 40 zombies all at once through this kind of open world. And you have to kind of work out ways, like, you know, while you're running away from this stuff, you have to make sure that you have to kind of work out ways to get rid of them, try and take them out bit by bit, and, you know, whittle those numbers down until it's something manageable for you to take out. And that kind of thing seems so exciting because that's so different to what you've got at the moment. Can't wait for that.
Is that VR as well?
No, sadly not. I wish it was.
No, but also in terms of exclusive, like on the horizon with PS, you've got two big ones coming, haven't you? You've got, I don't know if these are both exclusive, so you can correct me, but Last of Us and Red Dead.
Last of Us Part 2.
Last of Us Part 2 will be exclusive. Red Dead won't be.
Okay. Yeah.
But they're two we didn't see anything more of at E3.
I was really gutted.
They were both no-shows.
What games-wise were you excited about at E3 then?
So, I mean, the big one for me, I think, well, there were two big ones, but Beyond Good and Evil 2 was really exciting for me. So that's a sequel to a cult classic PS2 Xbox GameCube era game. So this is 2003, the first one came out.
Yeah.
They announced they were making a sequel in 2008, released the first teaser trailer, 2008. since then, there was some leaked footage, 2010, 2011. A couple times it was claimed to be on hold, then back in development, then back on hold, then publisher said it was on hold, the developers said it wasn't on hold, then the development studio shut down, but the team that were somewhere else started making it again. And it's sort of about October last year, they finally confirmed it was actually back in production, like, fully, they're actually making it.
like Chinese Democracy by Guns N' Roses. But when that came out after 20 years, it was crap.
Yeah.
So is this going to be crap?
That is the fear. So they put, all they've shown at E3 was a cinematic trailer, which looked absolutely fantastic. So it's a big like sort of sci-fi thing. Weirdly, for a sequel, so it's a numbered sequel, it's just called Beyond Good and Evil 2, but it's actually a prequel, which is a bit odd, to say the least. But they've
so
gone...
easily just called it Before.
Yeah. But so the big question mark here is it's very early in development and they are being hugely ambitious about what they say they want to do. They want to do a big open world sci-fi game. They want to do that sort of No Man's Sky thing where it's all procedurally generated universe.
Yeah. That could go wrong.
Except they're claiming to be able to do all the things No Man's Sky couldn't do. So they're saying you can go straight from ground up to space, like seamlessly get into a ship on the ground and fly it straight up. No, like cutscene loading in between.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They're talking like amazing kind of nonsense stuff, like the star system's all actually going to be generated with actual planets orbiting suns, and that will then affect how the sunset and sunrise look when you're on a planet. That is actually determined by the position of those orbiting like celestial bodies, stuff like that. So there's a lot they're trying to do. They're very early on. We have no idea. They haven't even announced platforms yet. We don't know when it will come out, what it'll look like.
But there was a trailer at E3.
There's a big cinematic trailer, so
gameplay, just CG
footage, which looked very cool.
Cop out.
the difference between this and No Man's Sky is it's a much bigger team. It's from Ubisoft, so they're one of the world's biggest publishers. It's a big team working on it. There's a lot of money behind it. Whereas No Man's Sky was obviously started out as a very small project.
True.
So, but yeah, there's a lot of question marks, but it looks pretty exciting.
Mm. What about you?
Oh, it's a hard choice. Hard choice. It's between Assassin's Creed Origins and Far Cry 5 for me.
And Assassin's Creed Origins, you can buy a £700 version of it.
It's absolutely insane. What, actually, tell me, Don, what comes with that? I see
you get some...
Oh, you get a scimitar.
You get a sort of 30-inch tall numbered statue. You get, obviously, all those Season Pass DLC. You get a hand-drawn map. A few other things. It's absolutely...
A bag of Jake Gyllenhaal's hair.
It's totally there's nothing in it to be worth £700.
So yeah, I would just be paying for the standard version.
he's Prince of Persia, isn't he? He's not Assassin's
Who
Creed.
Who is Assassin's Creed?
Fassbender. Good Prince of Persia reference, though.
Yeah.
The Assassin's Creed looks really interesting because they had a year off last year. They were like, do you know what? Because Syndicate didn't get the warmest reception.
Yeah.
So they're like, do you know, we're going to take a year off. We're going to do what we're doing. And then we'll come back in 2017 with something brand new. And this is what they've done. They have taken it way back to ancient Egypt. It's the start of the Assassin Brotherhood.
Right.
There are some there are some changes in the game that kind of make it a lot better. Like, you can explore underwater. In previous Assassin's Creed games, you can always swim, but you can never go underwater. And obviously in this one, you can. So you can explore underwater wrecks and stuff like that and find treasure, which adds a kind of new dimension to the game.
Sweet.
Also, instead of eagle vision, you've got an actual eagle, which I think is pretty cool.
Big upgrade, big upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
Bird of prey is always talking an upgrade about. In my book.
And you know, I mean, it can't go wrong with that, really. So you can summon your eagle with a tap with the directional pad, and you'll get a kind of a bird's eye view of your location. You can scout out people that you need to take out, kind of interesting areas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But apparently it's quite, I've read some hands-ons from E3, and it's quite a fiddly mechanic to get used to compared to the eagle vision.
They've got a few months to polish it, though.
Yes, what I mean, it'll be fine by the time it comes
I would have
out.
Loved to have been in that production meeting. It's like, what can we do with eagle vision? I know.
Guys, I've got it.
A real eagle.
They hold the throne.
I mean, I think the thing that excites me most about Assassin's Creed Origins is actually just the setting. I've never really played many of the Assassin's Creed games before, but an ancient Egypt setting is the sort of thing that makes you go, ooh, I'm quite tempted.
Exciting, yeah.
It's a bit underexplored in video games.
They just seem to get the settings right. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the series, but like when they did the one that was set in like New England, like at like the turn of like that time when there was all the like the ships coming in, and I saw the trailer and I was like, I'm into this, like this looks great, this looks like somewhere that I want to go.
Yeah, they've kind of taken the best bits from all the previous games and kind of molded them into this, so it's like it's the biggest map they've ever had, the most varied map they've had. So they've got, you've got kind of, you've got oceans where you can do all the kind of ship sailing, you can have battles on the oceans, you can have battles underwater.
Nice.
Which I'm really interested to see how that
plays
out.
The only thing is, like with Assassin's Creed, a lot of the game tends to be like running along rooftops and stuff, whereas like ancient Egypt,
story tends quite different in this one. There's not loads of really tall buildings. thank
they
God.
They do show him sliding down a pyramid in the trailer, so that will happen.
I'd be disappointed if they didn't.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be better than the Tom Cruise mummy vehicle, wherever it happens. Yeah. Is there anything non-Nintendo before I steer your ship that way?
Yes, I can talk about some other non-Nintendo things before I just Nintendo all over the place.
Yep.
Anthem is one of my other big highlights of this year. So this is a newly announced game from BioWare, who are the best known for RPGs, so they made the Mass Effect and Dragon Age games, and also the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic series.
That's a good game.
Yeah. So this is basically BioWare doing Destiny. So Destiny came out a couple of years ago, and we got Destiny 2 this year.
Yeah.
Sort of pioneered what's now becoming a genre in its own right, which is the sort of MMO FPS. So it's sort of online multiplayer shooter that fuses the sort of action elements of a shooter with some sort of light role-playing elements and sort of character progression, leveling up, gear, loot, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anthem is basically in that line. It's not a first-person shooter, it's actually third-person, but it's the same kind of like sci-fi setting. You play online, you sort of control these exosuits that you can upgrade, and that determines your abilities, but you can also have different ones, so you sort of build a collection of different suits. So it seems like you don't have to commit as much to, I'm this character, these are my powers forever and ever. You sort of have build up a selection of different kits. You can say, right, today I want to play as a tank, and you don't even play that, but then you can be like, I can play as the same character the next day, and I want to be sort of more like high damage, but, you know, low defenses, and you sort of fly around, and it's in this sort of sci-fi setting where the last of humanity is sort of trapped in one city kind of thing, and you go outside the walls, and there's sort of like wild animals and that sort of thing. I played a lot of Destiny. Like a lot of Destiny. We'll play a lot of Destiny 2 when that comes out later this year. And then Anthem will be late 2018, which will be about when I've run out of Destiny 2 to play. And I'll be ready to play a lot of Anthem. And then hopefully a year after that, Destiny 3. So I'll just continue just on a nice going. Little loop.
I'm going to watch your holiday allocation with great interest.
Oh, yeah.
So, is it Nintendo time?
I think Lewis might have a brief VR.
Hit me with them.
Let's go with the VR. So it's Bethesda. Bethesda is the place to go for VR this year at E3, apparently. So last year they announced Fallout 4 VR, which was a very exciting concept for those with a HTC Vive, because at that point there wasn't much in the way of games for VR, because it had only been out for a couple of months, and you know, that was the first big AAA game that was going to come to VR.
It was all like short experiences before that. The idea of something like big, open, you could play 100 hours in this.
Exactly,
didn't exist.
So yeah, that was very exciting. Then nothing was said for months and months and months, and I just thought it kind of dropped off the radar. But lo and behold, E3 2017, Fallout 4 VR is coming later on this year, and it's going to be the full Fallout 4 game, so you can explore everywhere that you did on consoles, but in VR, you can use both your hands, because it's HTC Vive, you've got the room scale tracking, so you can walk around, physically bend down, jump up and down, you know, punch people, all that kind of stuff. You can be able to do that physically, and it'll be emulated in the game.
Okay, so then how does that work, moving around the world?
Yeah, that's the teleportation system. Okay. So I think this is something they might still be working on. They haven't confirmed what it's going to be yet, but based on kind of hands-on stuff like that, they're saying it's a mix of teleportation, so point and click, and you'll teleport to that location. Mm-hmm. But they are also toying with adding a few experimental motion systems where you can kind of use the trackpad on the motion controller to kind of move in a certain direction and stuff like that. I mean, but the issue is with that is that it can induce motion sickness quite easily.
Yeah.
So that's only for kind of hardcore VR users.
Because this is me from a very non-gaming perspective. Would they ever make it like, you know, like Time Crisis? Where you just move automatically.
No, I can't. I hate VR games like that on rails. Yeah. I can't stand them. But I mean, you know, some people like them because they want the gentle experience in VR. Yeah. But as someone that's, you know, been doing this VR thing for over a year now, I'm ready for the AAA kind of explore everywhere, be just, in it for hours on end.
Just not something that actively makes you chunder.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be sick. That's the main
Always
thing.
Up for those experiences.
But there was also two new additions this year. So they've also announced Doom VR. And Skyrim VR as well. But Skyrim VR was not announced during Bethesda's press conference. That was announced during Sony's because, rather annoyingly, it's a PlayStation VR exclusive.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is really... I don't really get that because it seems that the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive have much better controllers, and the tracking system's more accurate. So I'm not really sure where they're going with that, but fair play.
I think they're going with Sony's giant bank account.
Yep, there we go.
And volume of potential customers as well.
Yeah, exactly. There are already more than a million PlayStation VRs out there, so
really impressive.
It's a big install base. Yeah, I think Nintendo all over the
shop. Nintendo time.
Yeah, go on. Mario?
Yeah, so new trailer for Super Mario Odyssey, which is the big new Switch Mario platformer.
He's in New York now.
He's in New Donk City.
Brilliant.
He's put a donk on it.
Yeah. A donk on it.
it looks pretty nuts. So it's coming out in October, late October. The chief gimmick this time around is hats. It's a hat-themed game.
Great.
So not only
love
can you access a variety of hats, you can get like a top hat or a sombrero or a builder's hat, things
does
like that,
into
or
the,
a safari hat.
Does it turn you into the stereotype of each of these?
Is this just hats?
You do gain different abilities based on those, but I don't
on the sombrero.
I've always thought there's not enough. There's not enough hat games out there.
No, but
it's a poorly catered market.
It's a niche but important demographic. And Nintendo has attacked the hat sort of theme on two fronts. So not only are there multiple hats to get, but when you're using the main Mario hat, it's now semi-sentient. It's got eyes on it, and they're calling it Cappy.
It's a bit creepy.
It is a bit creepy. You can throw it at enemies, and then, well, not even just enemies, you can throw it at other things and then possess them.
Okay.
So what happens there, essentially, so Mario, say, throws his hat at a Goomba, that classic little like brown mushroom enemy. And then you've got a Goomba walking around with a Mario moustache and a Mario cap that you're controlling.
Right.
That's sort of odd enough, but they've taken it way beyond just the normal Mario enemies you'd expect, like Goombas and Koopas. You can throw it at the creepy, sort of almost realistic-looking humans in New Donk City. You can throw it at the yellow taxi cab, so you can be a Mario, a little yellow New York taxi cab with a Mario hat and a moustache.
So
you can throw it at a dinosaur. You can be a T-Rex in a tiny Mario hat.
So something to me like a massive open world, like, you know, Mario 64.
Yeah, it's...
But it's way more interactive.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it's going down that kind of big Mario 64 huge worlds. Lots of different, they're called kingdoms. So there's New Donk City, the realistic-y one. There's this dinosaur world. There's a Mexican Day of the Dead themed world. And there'll be a few more. The plot is that Bowser is going to marry Princess Peach. And the bosses throughout the game are all of his wedding planners.
I rate that, actually. Really?
Yeah, no, that's
I'm on board now.
Is that not the plot, like, since time immemorial?
Yeah, but now they really, like, explicitly, there's a wedding. Like, Bowser's in a white tuxedo. It looks pretty amazing.
He's got to ruin his
wedding. My biggest question about this is, so for all these years, have I actually been controlling Mario's hat instead of Mario in all these old good games? Nice. Is he just along for the ride? Can he not just take the hat off?
Yeah. You know? Does he have an eagle?
I don't think so. But I don't know, maybe you can throw a hat at an eagle and control the eagle in a tiny Mario hat. Nintendo are probably working on that right now.
And this is exclusive to Switch.
Exclusive to Switch and out at the end of October.
Nice.
That's not the only Mario thing, though. I want some brief mention for a real oddity that I'm surprisingly
Do that, Scott, do you know what a rabbit is?
Yeah. I do not.
Neither did I.
Yeah. So, Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle is on the way. A rabid is, that's with a D rather than a T.
Yep.
It's a sort of wacky rabbit character that Ubisoft made a few years ago. It was a spin-off from Rayman. And they basically make these sort of very kind of generic and obnoxious party games with them. Yeah. Kids love them.
They were terrible.
Like really annoying rabbit things.
What, the kids?
With like bug teeth. But they just, yeah, this Mario and Rabbids crossover, which came out of nowhere, seems really odd. It's got stuff like Mario's using a laser gun, like Mario never uses guns. It's all really weird. And everyone, it was leaked a lot before E3, and everyone was sort of looking at this is clearly going to be awful. And then they showed the first gameplay footage, and it looks really, really good.
Yeah, sometimes these things they'll just work.
So know? It's like a tactical combat thing, which is really unexpected. It's like XCOM or Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. It's like turn-based grid strategy combat with like the Mario characters. And like this is like destructible cover system. There's this great like movement mechanic where your characters can leapfrog each other, which makes like the strategy around your team even more important than a lot of those games. Like, it could be really good. And I'm just confused by that. I was expecting to hate it, and it's suddenly one of my E3 highlights.
Nice.
And I don't know why.
It's a bold statement.
But the last big Nintendo news is on two fronts. Double whammy of Metroid games.
Wham!
Which is really exciting, because I haven't played Metroid games in years. So yeah. We've got Metroid Prime 4 in development for the Switch. We know nothing about it except they've shown us a hastily assembled logo.
Yep.
And said, it's in development. But then Metroid Samus Returns for the 3DS, which is, I think, a remake of Metroid 2? Is that
it's
right?
It's the remake of the Game Boy game Metroid 2, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But quite like a... I think they've taken liberties with the remake. It's not... They've added new features. They've added a melee counter.
Yeah, so like the original Game Boy game is called Return of Samus. So yeah. This is just called Samus Returns. But, I mean, they've got a good track record of... remaking Metroid games and making them like you just completely replayable, even if you know them back to front. Like they did Metroid Zero Mission for the Game Boy, and that was the original Metroid game just redone. But like, yeah, obviously the 3DS is slightly better than the original Game Boy.
Yeah,
and you got like, tons more controls and stuff. It looks great.
And 3D graphics.
Yeah,
looks very cool. And I think the best surprise about that is no one knew this game was on the way.
Yeah,
and they revealed it during E3 and said it's coming out in September.
Yeah, it's ready.
Like, 3 months away, but it's, you know.
That's nice to see, because would you generally say that E3 this year has been quite a lot of, here's another trailer, and that's it?
Yeah, lots of trailers, and lots of them ending with 2018.
Yeah, it's the old Red Dead thing, isn't it? So here's some more pictures.
Yeah.
I don't care. Just give me a demo.
But overall, like, you pleased? You guys have been pretty excited all week.
I mean, it's been an interesting week. There's some good trailers out, but in terms of new game announcements, I've didn't think it was as good as last year. I mean, I don't know if that's controversial or not. But.
Yeah. No, I think this year's felt a bit like it's a consolidation. Loads of stuff was announced last year, and then no news on any of it for 12 months, and it feels like a lot of, oh, now here's the actual gameplay footage from that game we gave you a cinematic for last year.
Yeah.
But actual new announcement this year have been thin on the ground. Anthem and Beyond Good and Evil 2 are the big ones, and then like Metroid Prime 4, but there's not even any footage of that.
It really does sound like we just like collectively have to clear our diaries for 2018, because it's going to be the end of the year.
Oh, wait, so Scott and Lewis, both PlayStation guys, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are you Xbox?
I've got a PS4 and the Nintendo stuff.
Okay, so no one's going to buy the Xbox One X in this room then?
No.
Okay. Nice one,
Microsoft. I've got the
Pro. Nice one, Microsoft. Well, on that note, Dominic Preston, game or lame?
Game.
Lewis.
Always game.
And Scott.
Game.
Cool. 4 games. Brilliant. We'll be right back to talk about Uber. Okay, so we all use Uber, but it's usually in the news for the wrong reasons, and not quite so much as it has been recently. No. Am I right, Scott Carey?
Yeah, in this week's edition of what have they done now? Uber have lost another raft of top executives. Including their very much under fire CEO, Travis Kalanick, who has been sort of clinging onto power for the entirety of the year as the company has weathered bad PR after bad PR. He's finally decided to take a undisclosed leave of absence, which is pretty big news. Sort of everything that has happened at Uber has been on his watch, and there's been a lot of pressure from outside the company and at board level for him to step away and sort of let an adult take charge.
But also, just on a serious note, his mum was also tragically
killed. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. So, I mean, his mum was killed in an accident fairly recently, and his dad is also in hospital. So he is taking some personal time as well to sort of deal with that. So
doesn't make what he did okay.
No, it's always, I mean, it's a case of terrible timing on both fronts for him. But it'll be really interesting now to see how Uber sort of fills the massive personality gap that there is at the top of the company, because Kalanick is Uber, and everything that's sort of happened at Uber is down to him. The macho, aggressive, bro-ish, do anything for the sake of growth culture is very much all Kalanick's doing. And now they really need to try and shift gears. So just for people who aren't quite up to speed.
Yeah, go for it.
I think maybe about 3 months ago, but basically near the beginning of the year, one of their former engineers named Susan Fowler wrote a blog post, quite a long blog post, about there being like a pervasive sexual harassment culture at Uber.
Yeah, we talked about it on the pod.
Coming all the way from the top. She quit. She went to Stripe, the payment startup, and since then, there's been a report overtaken by an independent committee looking by Eric Holder, who's the former Attorney General of the US, looking at the sort of cultural issues. And on Tuesday morning, they released to staff 13 pages of recommendations from that report into how they're going to try and deal with the cultural issues that the company has. Easier said than done, obviously, like culture can't be changed overnight. But Kalanick stepping away is a big step in that, and who they replace him with will be absolutely massive.
Because in his notes to his employees, yeah, that was sort of distributed. I don't think it was even leaked.
He said
he said like people at the top of the company will be taking charge. So are you saying that these people won't hold power and they will actually appoint an interim CEO?
I think they'll have to appoint an interim CEO, and it will have to be a fairly big name. It'll have to be someone with a really good track record.
Could it be Marissa Mayer?
It won't.
Just about to say that.
The timings works, girl.
It would be a phenomenal story, and as a journalist, I want it to happen more than anything.
So it has crossed your mind.
Oh God, yeah. It's been talked about. It's been very much
really?
Talked about.
Oh, I was just joking.
But the thing is, I just don't think she'll do it. I mean, it's
she's got a little bit of cash, so yeah, she's probably fine.
She'll go and be a VC somewhere. But like, I mean, it's the biggest poison chalice of all poison chalices, yeah, and she's already done that at Yahoo, so I'm not sure she wants to do it again.
Because they're shedding employees left, right, and centre there, and not just in the ranks, like at the top.
Yeah, so I think 20 people have left or been fired.
Brilliant.
Since the release of Susan Fowler's blog post, and that includes sort of one quarter of their traditional C-suite. So they're currently hiring a COO. They're currently hiring a new CRO. They're without a CEO. they've shed board members. They've shed high-profile staff. Basically, all of Kalanick's sort of leading advisors within the company, which he calls the A team. Most of those guys have, and they are guys. Most of those guys have left the company as well. So there's been a huge clearing of the boards. One interesting little tidbit. I love this. So there was a all-hands meeting at the company on Tuesday intended to bring staff up to date with what the 13 recommendations of the Holder report were in terms of how they're going to try and turn the company around,
yeah,
and get rid of the sort of culture of sexism and sexual harassment. During that meeting, one of the board members, Mr. Bonderman, who's from TPG Capital, which is a venture capitalist firm, he responded to a comment that Arianna Huffington, who's on the board as well, made, saying, basically, we need more female people on the board because the more female people you get, the more diversity you get.
That's what she said, right?
That's what she said. He responded during an all-hands meeting designed to make sure that there wasn't any sexist remarks being made. He said, no, what that will do will end up with more talking. Which
was then leaked.
Silenced the room, apparently.
Yeah.
Everyone was like absolutely left aghast at this meeting. He quickly resigned from the board, like almost almost comically quickly. Like I think within a couple of hours of the meeting,
wow,
he had resigned from the board and apologized, and there had been complaints about him made to HR from various people sat in that meeting. So I mean, that just tells you all you need to know about, yep, what is happening, yep, at Uber. Like in a meeting designed to stop this from happening, someone makes a sexist remark at the board level. So, I mean, that's the issue they're grappling with here.
Yeah, it's just completely ingrained sexism in the, yeah, the just the people that he surrounded himself with, like you say.
Yeah.
So is it going to take somebody coming in, or potentially someone who's already there, who can just hire a different breed of people, or have they just mixed in with this wrong crowd?
I think it's more cultural. So even Richard Branson was coming out of the woodwork yesterday. He was at an event and someone asked him what he thought about it, and he said that Kalanick should have stepped away years ago. before this all happened, and let and sort of a more experienced Silicon Valley CEO take over and let Kalanick do what Kalanick does, which is basically just aggressively pursue growth of the company. But maybe sort of put, you know, some guardrails up for him. Because it's his company, he never had any guardrails. He did whatever he wanted. As I said earlier, I mean, I literally have no idea who could do this job, but it would it would take quite a lot of reorganization of the company, and basically they need to put in. The problem with Susan Fowler is that she made multiple complaints about there being sexual harassment while she was at the company, and they were just ignored because there were no HR systems in place. There were no protections for her. Right. Basically, it was, if you're the best engineer, if you're a high performer, you get away with more than if you're a low performer or if you're a woman. Like, that is exactly how the company was set up.
Gross.
So it needs to be completely rebuilt. The systems need to be put in place, and they need to be extremely serious about it. The other thing is, like, none of this really seems to affect Uber, the company.
I was just about to ask, are there any numbers on whether or not people are catching fewer Ubers?
So there was a delete Uber hashtag that did the rounds at the beginning of the year when a lot of this was kicking off. There were other reasons as well, which I can't be bothered to go into, but like other bad PR that they've had all year.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, they don't release their figures because they're not a public company. But most... Most guys that have gone and looked and tried to get some insight into this have shown that maybe 200,000 people have deleted Uber since.
Yeah.
probably less than 500,000 tops. And for a company the size and scale of Uber like that, that really is not going to dent their top line.
No.
The drivers don't seem to care because, you know, they do it for a living. Riders don't seem to care because there isn't really an alternative, especially in this country.
Yeah.
I think Lyft are seeing a little bit of a pickup in business in the US because they do the same thing essentially, but with slightly more of a social conscience. But other than that, I don't really think that outside of sort of tech and business circles, anyone really knows or cares about how badly organized and run a company Uber is.
Yeah, it's kind of awareness of its problems quite, like you say, quite localized, because it got front page above the fold on the New York Times yesterday, which is pretty big. But obviously New York and then San Francisco as well are Uber central, as is London. But like sometimes, like I still meet relatives who don't know what Uber is,
because they don't
live in London, so it doesn't really make like they say, like, national news. Sometimes I don't know.
I'd say
he's reading it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say it's an interesting definition between Uber the service and Uber the company. I think like Uber the company, if it was a publicly traded company, it would have definitely seen a massive hit to its stock price recently, because that's sort of how that works. But actually, in terms of usage and public perception, I think it pretty much is localized. It's interesting you mentioned the New York Times, because it's worth shouting out Mike Isaac at the New York Times, who covers Uber to a sort of extent which makes me feel exhausted just reading it.
he's tireless.
Yeah, he's absolutely tireless. He's absolutely brilliant. He's well worth following on Twitter just to see, like, just to keep up with, like, the ridiculousness that is Uber. And I'm pretty sure that when he took that beat on, he wouldn't have expected it to be as lively a beat as it is. It basically is a news story every day for him in terms of someone leaving or someone saying something absolutely abhorrent.
Yeah, it's his story that was on the front page, obviously.
Yeah.
And do you think, or do you know, whether the company was intending to try and go public in the coming months? And obviously, it can't right now.
Yeah.
But is Kalanick so controlling that he didn't even want to do that?
He didn't want to. I mean, he liked having control of the company. And he's constantly said that he has no intention of taking it public. I don't see why they would go public, to be honest. Like, they're swimming in cash. People are so willing to invest in it. They're at no point anywhere near being profitable, which is quite important when you want to go public. I mean, not that important if you're Snapchat, who are nowhere near profitable either, and that didn't stop them from going very successfully public. But I think that's very far off their list of priorities at the moment. It's very much a turnaround job at the moment in terms of corporate culture and the way the company is run, and it won't happen overnight. I don't think Kalanick's really helped by not putting any sort of distinct timings on his leave of absence. So he hasn't really made any recommendations to public knowledge of who should step up. He hasn't put a timeline on it, which basically puts anyone into that job with a really unenviable task of basically having a big job to do but not knowing how long they've got to do it. So
probably not wanting to do it either. But then again, with the kind of people that we've been seeing coming out of the woodwork, is it just going to be a big bunch of abhorrent men fighting over the CEO role?
It's just like they really, really should hire a woman to this job. They would be absolutely insane not to. It's just whether there's a woman out there that wants to do it, a woman out there that has the sort of experience.
Are you sure about that though? Do you think if they not hired a woman at this point, is it kind of like a damned if they do, damned if they don't? Because if they do, it's going to be like, well, they've just done that because, you know, they're all sexist. So
yeah,
but I mean, if they hire a man, they're like, you're sexist.
Yeah, they very much are damned if they do, damned if they don't. I think they'll be slightly less damned if they hire a woman to do the job.
There you go, guys. Slightly less damned.
Yeah, the problem is like there really just aren't that many sort of very successful female CEOs in Silicon Valley. There is one. It just walked off into the sunset with $23 million.
$23 million. Wow, that's a lot of Ubers.
That is a lot of Ubers. I'm sure they don't pay for their own Ubers.
No.
I mean, it's just watch this space. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating for me what's going to happen over the next 6 months of the year for that company.
Yeah. Has it stopped you guys using Uber? Do you guys use Uber?
Every now and again. I wouldn't say I use it religiously or anything like that. It's just if I'm caught out late night, then I'll just grab one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a pretty sporadic user. I'm not sure if I have used one over the past few months, but I certainly haven't made a choice not to.
This is what annoys me about Uber.
I still use Uber, and I'll slag them off left, right, and centre.
I'm completely aware of their wrongdoing, but like it's so annoying because it's a really good idea, and if they got it right and had all their, you know, those funny things called morals in place, but also not just with the board level and everything that's come out in the past few months, but just the way that they treat their drivers is historically pretty bad, and it's a great idea. It's been terribly implemented by terrible people.
Yeah, there's a really interesting counterpoint. This will at no point scale to the point that Uber will scale. But basically in Austin, Texas, a few months ago, Uber and Lyft got banned from the state because they weren't willing to fingerprint their drivers for background checks. So they basically, both those ride-hailing companies left the city. But the city had already got used to ride hailing. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's been to Austin, it's got a very lively sort of bar culture. So like Lyft using ride hailing services became very popular in Austin. So then there were lots of people that were ride hailing drivers who were suddenly out of work. A new company came out of nowhere called Ride Austin. The interesting thing about Ride Austin is that it's a non-profit. So they pay their drivers a lot better than Uber and Lyft, and then anything they make in profit goes to Austin-based charities or infrastructure projects. I think that's a really interesting model. The great thing is that now Uber and Lyft are allowed back into Austin because they changed the laws again. They're not actually getting their market share back because the drivers would rather stay with Ride Austin because they get a better deal. So I think proving out that model in Austin is really interesting, and that might start to scale across the US and maybe into other countries in terms of running it as a non-profit rather than running it as a sort of big corporate machine like Uber did.
Interesting. Thank you very much for the overview.
Yeah.
We will watch with, what's the word? Interest.
Yes.
Sorry, it's getting really hot in here. Scott Carey, Kalanick or Kalonic?
Colonic.
Lewis.
Colonic.
Dom.
It's got to be a colonic.
What an asshole. Got my big payoff. Thanks, guys, for listening. Thank you, Scott and Lewis and Dom. And we will be back next week for episode 66. Say goodbye, guys.
See ya.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.